Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into this edition of Unpaved. Of course, he is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. Follow him at Sean Unfiltered. Me at Adam G. Sager. The show at Unpaved on Rumble. Go like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Sean, we sit here this morning. I look out my window. Looks like I have some flurries coming down. Ugh. I am not ready.
It's been about 82 here in Houston today. Yeah. Well, little golf, little overcast. Perfect. In fact, I'm probably going to have to take this performance hoodie off and just wear the golf shirt. So, I mean, but who's keeping track, you know?
You know, it's just, it's that
Isn't
time.
Isn't it late for snow there? Shouldn't you guys have already been beat down already?
Normally, it depends year to year. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes we don't get snow till January. So it just kind of picks and chooses by the year. But we got a lot to get to today. We got Thursday Night Football. We're going to look ahead to Bills at Texans. We've got some just NFL news across the league with some injuries, some guys returning from practice. So we got a lot to get to. And then we'll have former Washington State quarterback and NFL quarterback Luke Falk join us to talk some football, talk about his new book. And a lot to get to today, Sean.
Yeah, there sure is. And I can't wait to talk to Luke. Nobody sat in those meetings more than he did with Mike Leach. And it's a good time with all the stuff going on with Lane Kiffin and college coaching. And I think at this time of year, we miss Mike's humor, wisdom, because right around now he'd be talking about the college football playoff and people getting married and what to get at the holiday season and what you should or shouldn't have at Thanksgiving. So Luke, who is a buddy of mine and a very bright mind, trying to influence and help others and, you know, giving speeches and writing this book. It'll be fun to spend about 15 minutes with Luke, and we'll get him here in about 10 minutes.
Before we get into Thursday Night Football, tell me about Augusta Precious Metals.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, I think at times we're so uninformed about, well, not only the growth, but the impact in the right way for you, for your retirement, when it comes to precious metals and tangible gold. And, you know, when you watch these guys in sports and football every week, we'll see them Saturday and Sunday, even high school Friday nights. But when you watch them in football and in life, it constantly reminds me that the clock's always ticking, right? It constantly ticks. And once that second minute time money's gone, it's gone forever. And when it's late in the game, you don't freeze. You got to stay calm and make the smart move, right? You need to do that in your career. I needed to do it on the field and off the field. Maybe more important now than ever, because you can overcome an interception. Can you overcome a horrible decision when it comes to your retirement? Well, Augusta Precious Metals is here to help, and here's the reasons why, and we got a good playbook for you. Honestly, listen, what's going on with this country? I've been looking at it. A lot of you have. You see it on your TV every day. We're $38 trillion in debt, and that's not one person's fault, obviously. Now, heading towards $40 trillion in debt in 2026, it's alarming. So that's the pressure that hits everyone, not just people on the field or people in this part of the world or the wealthy or the poor and everybody in between. But it also hits those folks that are trying to retire with confidence, all right, that security and peace of mind. And that's what I've been talking with my team at Augusta Precious Metals about. They're the ones helping people understand, and boy, do we need the education that comes with it, how to keep part of their savings in something real. Just a dollar, but gold, tangible assets right in your hand. So it's not all tied into what the next move Washington makes. Isn't it amazing when you're tied up into, well, that person's decision affects my retirement or my life. How about having tangible assets in your hand like gold? And that's where Augusta Precious Metals comes in. And they put together a short, which is it, you can get through it urgently and get through it right. A free guide called the $40 trillion threat report. The $40 trillion threat report just explained what's going on and what options you've got. Don't you want to be informed? It's your money. It's your retirement. It's your peace of mind. And it's your confidence. The $40 trillion threat report. If you want to see it, there's a link in my description and you can just text or go to text Sean, that's S-E-A-N, to 35052. That's text Sean to 35052 and they'll send it right over. Take a look when you have a minute and it won't take long to get through it. It's worth understanding the game we're all playing in. And whether you're in pro sports or not, the game of life and the game of retirement, you are playing it. Augusta Precious Metals, again, it's a free guide. Go check it out, the $40 trillion threat report, by texting Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. So there you go. This affects everybody, and I think you'd probably like something tangible in your hand so Washington doesn't affect every move you make, guys. So hop on there and text that link to 35052 or click the link in the description below and get that report to you, and you'll be quite pleased with why precious metals are making a huge difference, and Augusta Precious Metals is a place to be.
Man, I don't think people realize how much $38 trillion is, or $40 trillion.
Yes. I mean, and Segs, you know what's great about that?
Amount of money.
It is, and going to creep into 40, but the trends and where we're headed with precious metals and gold, if you think it's at a, and it's, I mean, it is at a great position right now. That position's going to get greater in 26, 27. Let the guide help you out. And it's alarming, but what's more alarming is you not getting involved with it. Let them educate you. Augusta Precious Metals.
All right. Tonight, we got Bills at Texans, Thursday night football. Some different dynamics in this game. C.J. Stroud will not play due to his concussion. He is at practicing, but they don't want to rush him back, and they'll let him take that extra, you know, 8-9 days off before the next game. But when you look at this game, Sean, I think it always comes down to, with these two teams, it's going to be the Bills offense, which is the fourth highest scoring offense at like 29.2. Let me get it correct. And then the Texans defense, which is the number one scoring defense at 16.3. So those two sides of the ball, when they match up, I think that's the key to this game. Whoever wins that matchup wins the game for this matchup every single time.
Defensive advantage. Texans. I think Texans, I mean, the statistics bear that out. They're as good a defensive team as we have in the league all the way around. They fly, they hit, they knock the piss out of you. They'll get after the quarterback, two edge rushers. If you just double team one, the other can take over a game. This defense is real. And on the back end, they will knock you around, and they got ball hawks. They're very, very good. Buffalo's advantage is on offense. But I can tell you this, if you're the Texans and you take Josh Allen and make him one dimensional, you can win the football game. And I am not, I'll be honest, I never thought I'd say this. I am not reeling because C.J. Stroud's not playing. Davis Mills has proved for 2 weeks now that he's not only a capable backup, he's not better than C.J. Stroud. You'd love to have him. But Davis Mills is making some pretty damn good decisions and throws. If they lose, I don't think it's going to be because Davis Mills pissed down his leg. I don't. I actually think that this rest is good. Why force C.J. back? You'd love to have him. There's a reason why he's the starter. But this is exactly what I preach about, why you have to be prepared, do the lonely, quiet work to get yourself ready without pouting, which some backups may do in this league, is you get yourself ready, because when they call on you, your responsibility is not just to be a guy. Your responsibility is to act and perform like the guy, so you can put pressure on him not to take you out of the lineup. Look what Mac Jones did. Purdy comes back, plays well. But Mac Jones kept them afloat during this with his teammates. Mm-hmm. Where there wasn't such a fall off between Purdy and Mac Jones. Same thing here. Look at the numbers and look at the production. And I believe they're 2-0 the last 2 weeks. So in my mind, it gives you a chance. This isn't one of those, normally you go and say, oh my gosh, Josh Allen's out, Trubisky starting, or somebody else.
Right.
No disrespect to Trubisky. I am not right now, after the 2 weeks I've seen just with the eye test, telling you that, oh, Davis Mills is a letdown. Davis Mills has been great, and he does exactly what backup quarterbacks are supposed to do when they're starting, and that's a lesson to be learned. I love the Texans defense. But right now, I don't know how much they're going to be able to move the football consistently. There's got to be commitment to the run. You've got to limit plays for Josh Allen. You just do. If he takes over like he did against Tampa last week, Texans will go one step closer to making it really difficult on them to get in the playoffs if they lose this football game. But it's at home, and I would expect their defense to pose a lot of problems for Buffalo's offense. And obviously, Buffalo's run game needs to stay in this mix, and not just with Josh Allen's legs, obviously.
Right. Cook will have a lot to do with that. Keon Coleman will be inactive again this week. Deion Dawkins talked about it after last week's game and basically just kind of put it out there bluntly that he needs to grow up. He needs to get his life in order. And then asked about it after that, those comments, Keon Coleman kind of just pushed back and just says like, oh, you know, it's just some things, you know, not really a lot. I'm good. And now he's inactive again. So what's your take on this situation with Keon Coleman and the Bills and making him inactive again?
I don't have a problem with the Bills sending him out. Now, I don't know what the depth of these issues are. If you got a teammate saying, a veteran teammate telling you got to grow up. Now, what does that mean, Sags? Have we heard any report? I know there's speculation. I hate to speculate on what the reasoning is unless a coach or somebody comes out and says it, and they'll usually say, we take care of this business in-house. But when this happens and it's vague like this, all we can do is speculate. Are you missing meetings? Are you dicking around at practice? Are you showing up late for curfew? I don't know what it is. Are you doing something? You're obviously doing something because he's a good football player that's not allowing you to get in uniform and be on the field. Conduct detrimental, whatever it might be. But when a veteran teammate is also saying you got to grow up, then grow your ass up. I got news for you. These paychecks that you're getting and these opportunities you're getting, don't just fall off a turnip truck and land in your fucking lap when you're out of this league. While he's talented and there's no danger in being out of the league. I've seen the movie, though, Segs. It starts like this. It starts small. Oh, it's I got this. Then the next thing you know, well, you don't quite got it. Then the next thing you know, the team now is stepping in, and you're not on the field helping your team at a time when, quite frankly, they need more weapons instead of just rely on Josh Allen to have to do it all to put his team in position, not named Cook. So for me, I don't know what it is, but I can tell you this. There's a reason he's sitting on the bench. And if it's not performance related, it comes down to what's going on away from when you're supposed to put a uniform on. His obligation is his responsibility. And I don't know. I can't make an excuse if it's mental health or whatever it is, because I don't know. So I can only assume he's not in uniform because he's doing something that the Bills organization doesn't stand shoulder to shoulder with him on. So whatever that is, you got two choices, dude. You keep doing this and grow the reputation that you're that guy, or you can get the shit fixed and grow the reputation that you overcame it and you're the guy that we need to be out there on the field every week. So whatever it is, he's not following the rules and you got subordinates, follow them. Because some of these guys get to the point where they actually think that maybe they're a little bit bigger than the program, and you're not and you never will be, no matter who you are. So I don't know what it is. All we're doing is speculating. But when a teammate says grow up, it tells me there's some immaturity happening in the building, and Keon Coleman needs to act like that. Well, that he's been there and that football matters, because it does, because that's where he gets paid.
Exactly. Before we get to our guy, Luke Falk, our guest, Ian Rappaport reported right before the show started, Joe Mixon will not return this season for the Texans from the foot injury. So that will, you know, the Texans will have to continue on with Woody Marks and Nick Chubb and company in the backfield.
Segs, two quick things on that before we get to Luke. One is, Woody Marks is going to eventually be the go-to guy. You know this, right? It's becoming, because he's got thump inside and he's got more wiggle than anybody, as much as I like Nick Chubb, and he's really good in the passing game. Your biggest versatility, Joe Mixon, Woody Marks is becoming him. Now, one thing Joe brought is attitude, and he would knock the hell right out of you, and Marks is bringing that to the table. By this time next year, you know who their starting running back is going to be on a regular basis, three down back. It's going to be Woody Marks. He's already started to get that. I can tell you this, 7-8 weeks ago, on my show, when I was doing local, I said, when they're saying that they're not sure and this is going to take longer, you're not seeing Joe Mixon this year. I don't know what the future holds for Joe. It is a blow, but Woody Marks has been a phenomenal. Neither Woody Marks nor Nick Chubb were part of this last year. So you've had to rely on two backs to elevate your game. Woody Marks is going to be a player in this league, I assure you. So yep. And we'll see how that running game works tonight, because you sure as hell don't want to be one-dimensional against Buffalo either, because they will tee off on you. McDermott's seen the movie plenty of times.
Yeah. All right, now it's time to get to our guest, Luke Falk. Sean, take it away with him.
Yeah, and Anthony, just to answer your question before we get to Luke, Keon Coleman's a talented player. Good and talented, you're right. Maybe difference, but you can't miss meetings. You can't miss scheduled meetings. Maturity shouldn't be an issue for a guy that's playing in the league. Got to take you by the back of the coat collar and get him ready to play. Very talented player. He wouldn't be on the team if there was this kind of trouble, I assure you. All right, guests here, Luke Falk, the all-time leading passer in Pac-12 history, and there's been a lot of great ones go through it. A good buddy of mine, former college coach, went to Washington State as a walk-on and becoming one of college football and college games' most prolific passers ever. His journey taught him that real edge isn't physical, it's mental. He was shaped by mentors like Mike Leach, and nobody knows him better than Luke does, and Dr. Craig Manning. Luke learned the power of training the mind as intentional as the body. And today, as a mind strength coach, he uses RLE, real life experience approach, to help athletes, coaches, and high performers stay grounded under pressure and focused in the moment. He's one of the best dudes you'll ever meet. And we have him here today, and I'm so grateful to have him. Luke, welcome in, brother. The book's awesome. I haven't been able to read it all yet. The Mind Strength Playbook is what it's called. First off, and I appreciate you taking time as you see it there, guys, go out and get a copy. He's one of the brightest minds, and we got to spend a week together in Florida at a coordinator's think tank and coaching think tank, and one of the greats, and I don't think his coaching career is over if he wants it. Well, first off, with this and giving speeches and going out with the book, great to have you on. Is coaching still at the top of your mind, or is there a reason you don't want to do it if you don't?
Well, thanks for having me on. And, coaching, I love coaching. It's just a different element, different arena now. I think with the way college athletics is, I don't want to be a part of that in terms of the day-to-day grind. I still want to coach. I still want to, be a consultant for these top programs to be able to help develop, their guys, especially at the quarterback position. They invest so much money in that position, and why not be able to train their mind, which is because you and I both know it. So you work your butt off. And the thing that gets in the way of a performance that you really want is probably your mind. And what are we doing to really help them train that? So I think for me at this current state, the way the college football model is, I mean, I love what I'm doing. I'm having a lot of fun. It's been really fulfilling for me to be able to work with athletes or coaches or high performers or business leaders and actually develop the relationship and be able to see the kind of the fruit of your labor, rather than maybe you're coaching at a college place and then they're going to transfer out. So quality of life, just impact. I'm really loving where I'm at.
Did the transfer portal, Luke, and you and I've had some good conversations, did transfer portal, and you're so young in the infancy of your career, did the transfer portal and NIL sour you on the everyday recruiting and being an everyday college coach and that grind? Is that the reason you're not immersed into that part of it right now?
A little bit. I mean, I think what happened is I had a family member get diagnosed with, news that you don't ever want to hear. And it made me pause, and my wife paused, and we go, okay, what really matters? And really you put things under a microscope and you go, what do I really enjoy? Well, I enjoyed the coaching. I enjoyed the relationships. I didn't enjoy the X's and O's and the transfer portal and the money and this, that, and the other. And, I wasn't seeing my wife. I had a 1.5-year-old daughter or 1-year-old daughter at the time. And, I wanted to be around and be able to see her grow and be a part of her life. And really what helped me get on that path as well is Chris Peterson. I listened to a podcast of his before I got into coaching, and he talked about having a game plan for your life. And he thought that every coach should do that, because a lot of us chase after what he called society scoreboard, more accolades, money, prestige, fame. And he said it's basically a scoreboard. You'll never score enough points on that scoreboard. And to create a game plan for your life of being able to create, what's your mission? What are your values? What are your roles? And what are things that you stand by? And when decisions are, there in your life to be made, you go to your game plan rather than going to society scoreboard. For me, I put one of my values that I have is, my family. Well, I wasn't living in alignment with that. I also put one of the values I had of, going and fulfilling my purpose. I wasn't doing that in the college coaching realm. So that really helped me shift as well when I got this news from a family member. It's like, all right, it's time to make a change. And I don't know if that's going to be the current circumstance forever, but at least for right now, I'm not entertaining, hey, going to be in a position coach. What I would love to do, though, is go be part of a program and have an impact on the program with the mind strength portion of it without needing to get in the weeds of, hey, are we paying Jimmy so-and-so? Are we doing this over right here?
Luke Falk joins us, all-time Pac-12 passing leader. The Mind Strength Playbook, one of my favorite dudes, and listened to him talk in the time we were there. A brilliant mind for football and obviously for life and the teaching part that goes with everyday life in alignment with it. I've often said, and I said it last week on this show, that the quarterback position is the most undercoached position the more you go. When you get to the NFL, the most undercoached position. Agree or disagree, and why?
I think it depends on where you go. I heard Tom Brady talk about being able to rank coordinators 1 through 32 or quarterback coaches 1 through 32, because we always talk about, you know, this guy's a bust or this guy's that. A lot of them just end up in the right situation or the wrong situation. For me, I wouldn't have been able to play at the level I did in college without being in the right situation with Coach Mike Leach, who is obviously a phenomenal quarterback developer. I think what happens at the higher level, in my opinion, is that a lot of people just complicate things. It's like you as a quarterback have so much going on and you need to be able to process information quickly and make quick, decisive decisions. I think a lot of these systems really bog a quarterback down by, you know, too much on his plate of irrelevant information. And I think, you know, you see systems like Sean McVay and the Shanahan systems. I know that there's some complexity within them, but from the Reed standpoint, they're pure progression, which my wife could go in and play in that system then. You know, not saying that she would succeed, you got to be able to throw the ball, but that was what Leach was so great about. He's like, I don't want to bog your mind down with anything that isn't relevant. So, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks, in my opinion, they can list off the front, they can list off the blitz, they can list off the coverage, but they can't apply any of that information to be able to help them play at a higher level. Whereas Leach said, I don't really give a crap about all that stuff. Here's our offense, and here's what you need to do at the highest level, which is why his quarterbacks were so successful, in my opinion.
Luke, what when you first walked in, your first meeting quarterback, because, you know, you and I have had a conversation about Mike, and God rest his soul, I sure miss him, and I know you do, devastating, and it's there, I think about him all the time, is Mike, and we've talked, Mike's not letting anybody near his quarterbacks other than the other quarterbacks, right? I mean, Mike's got a stronghold over that and had one, should I say. When you walked into that first meeting with Mike Leach in the quarterback room, what was it like?
Well, my first recruiting visit, I learned, you know, like a lot of people talk about with Coach Leach, I learned things outside of football. I learned how, if I have wrinkles in my shirt, how to get them out on the road. So that was my first interaction with Coach Leach. So, you know, that was kind of how my quarterback meetings were moving forward. But for me, it was just, you know, I watched the Texas Tech, Texas game, and I'd watched them, Graham Harrell and those types of guys. Those are the guys I looked up to. Those are the guys that I played on NCAA football at the time. And for me to be in that same room, getting coached by, you know, the Pirate was unreal. I mean, I was just so grateful that I was even in the same room. I didn't care if we were, you know, I was a walk-on and I was fifth on the depth chart or I wasn't getting any looks. I was just grateful to be in the room and then to be able to hear him, how he approached the game, which people think it's like this, you know, mad scientist type of view. What's mad scientist about it? It's so simple. You know, I think the greatest coaches can really simplify things so the player can apply them. I think the coaches that aren't really great are the ones that overcomplicate things because they don't know themselves how to actually apply it. I think there's a lot of insecurities you and I both know in the industry to a certain degree. And I'll see coaches and I'm like, oh, that guy probably is blowing up on that kid because he doesn't necessarily know his job or assignment. You know, I saw it with position coaches, even in college coaching. It's like, if the running back makes a mistake on a certain play during blitz walkthrough, well, the running back coach starts getting mad at him. but come to find out he actually didn't install the thing before the play. So it's like, I think that's a lot of coaches' default is, you know, just scream and yell, and it makes up for, maybe makes the kid feel like they should know how to do it. But the great coaches, they really break it down for you. They really simplify it, because I think the simplest things are the easiest to continue to apply, right? You can scale those. And I think that's what Coach Leach did a great job of. So it wasn't like this, oh man, he's having a beautiful mind scene and drawing stuff up on the board. It was just like, oh wow, all right, we're going to stay consistent. We're going to keep things simple. And what power and value there is in that and executing your job.
Luke Falk, all-time Pac-12 passing leader. The book is The Mind Strength Playbook. And we got him on here today discussing, not only we'll get into that book in a second, but also the great Mike Leach. You know, and it also, you get to master your mind and elevate your game, not only the game on the field, but off the field. We see the picture of Mike Leach, and there's so many layers. People, I think we miss him, and college football does. At this time of year, we want to know what we're supposed to eat for Thanksgiving and what it's like if you're going to get married during December or on a Friday night in Texas. Mike was so just a great human to be around. What is one thing you mentioned? Because I think a lot of people think he's a semi-complex guy when he's talking to the media, yet you mentioned the simplicity that he makes it for quarterbacks and an offense in his room. Is there? Do you remember the heated moment with Mike on the field, on the sideline, that sticks out to you, or in the film room? Where, because you're, hey, to be a good quarterback, you got to be a little stubborn too and single-minded. Was there ever the clash between you and Mike that we don't know about?
Yeah, certainly. I think for any Washington State fans, they probably saw that him and I had a riff my senior year, and it was probably due, you know, obviously both parties played a role, but probably me in particular being young, dumb, and immature, and not buying into the system. And, you know, I was listening to you guys before I got on talking about, you know, the player up in Buffalo who might think he's more bigger than the program. Well, I kind of got that entitled mentality myself. And lo and behold, guess what? Nope, you're not bigger than the program, because guess who came back the next year? Well, a guy named Gardner Minshew, and he totally lit it up, and they didn't need Luke Falk. So, you know, you got to always remember as a player that it's a great privilege and honor to be able to put on the uniform and go out and execute your job and assignment. So, you know, we had plenty of those moments. I remember one in particular. We were playing the Holiday Bowl down in San Diego at the old Qualcomm Stadium in 2016, and we had a play against Minnesota where it was going to be reviewed, where it looked like, you know, he might not have got his toe down, and I was rushing up on the ball, and we subbed. So obviously in football, if you sub, then they hold the ball. And I was so pissed because I thought we could have got the call off, and, you know, come to find out they review it, then the call goes back. So, you know, fast forward my senior year, we played Boise State. Similar situation happened. We had a big, long, explosive play, but at the end, it looked like our guy fumbled it. So rushing to get the guys up on the ball, be able to, you know, try to eliminate the review, and we subbed. So that's when I just lost it on the field in that regard, that we hadn't learned our lesson from the year before. And, you know, Coach Leach just basically said, calm my ass down. I'm in charge. And he was, and he certainly was. But, you know, I think a great mind strength skill I learned from Coach, because you and I both know him, he's not going to mince words. I think that's a great aspect of him, because I think there's a lot of coaches that beat around the bush, and they actually end up harming their players in that situation because they don't tell them the truth. So, you know, there's a thing called hurt versus harm that I talk about, where I think as a leader, you need to be able to deliver hard news, which might hurt sometimes, but it's not going to harm the individual. Well, Leach was a master at being able to do that. Sometimes his delivery sucked, so then I created a skill, what not how. So it's like, okay, what's the coaching point I can take here? Not how's it being delivered. You know, it's like we were 8th in the country my senior year, 6-0 against Cal going into that game. We had just beaten a top 5 USC team and beaten Oregon on the road, and we got our butts kicked on Friday the 13th. I had 5 interceptions. I threw a pick on a freaking shovel pass. I'm sure Coug fans are still pissed off at me about it. But, you know, we go in the meeting room the next day, and Leach shows up in Leach time about, you know, let's say an hour and a half late. I mean, no joke. And he, first thing he does, he gets right in the room, and he looks right at me and goes, Falk, you got to be the slowest mother effer I've ever seen. I'm so tired of watching you pat the ball back there like an effing statue, taking sack after sack. And that was 10 minutes of just going at me. And so early in my career, that would have just crushed me. I would have, because I hung on to every word that coach said. If he said something positive, man, I'm riding high. If he said something negative, I'm in the dumps. So that would have just ended me. But the skill of what, not how, I had developed it.
We'll get Luke back on. We'll reconnect with him. We got to hear the rest of this. I mean, and we will. The Mind Strength Playbook. I know, listen, technology on phones is a pain in the ass. And this book is, I've seen a bunch of excerpts from it. I'm going to go get it because there's some things I want to, he delves into the mind, and I think it's awesome. And I actually think he can make a bigger impact this going and speaking to companies and kids and being a consultant because he's got such a great feel. And I admire, absolutely admire people who are able to walk away from something they're really good at. And I'm telling you, I've had conversation. I always felt he's going to be a great coach anyway. And this is a way to expand it, is admire people who are able to walk away from something at a young age, not really walk away, but from the coaching and the impact to make even a bigger difference because of the balance of family and the things you're trying to get done. And Luke rejoins us. And Luke, you were finishing up the story when he said, man, you hold the ball too long.
Yeah, sorry,
and
it would have
crushed
that.
You earlier in your career. That's okay, bud. No problem.
Yeah. So, hey, easy. You got to make an audible here. We're doing a mind strength skill. But
that's right.
Yeah. What I was saying is, you know, early on that would have crushed me, but now it's like, okay, what's the coaching point I can take from it? All right, get rid of the ball. No sacks, no negative plays, rather than how's it being delivered. And obviously if I focus on the how, then that would put me in the dumps. But if I can just eliminate the emotion behind it, then I really could use Coach Leach as an asset, which is exactly what I was able to do throughout my career. And, you know, thankfully I did, because he's obviously a Hall of Fame coach.
The Mind Strength Playbook is the book. What was this, a long process that you thought out over years of getting notes and how you wanted to make this book be impactful? Or did you wake up staring at the ceiling one night like we all do and woke up the next day saying, I'm putting this on paper and I'm going to author a book? How quickly did this decision become, or was it a big, long one?
Well, in 2015, I had a desire. There was a guy named Wayne Dyer that I really looked up to, who's a great author, speaker, thought leader. And I just said, you know what? I want to do what he does. I actually told my dad, I called him up. My dad went to Pullman and we had a conversation about this. But that's what I want to do in life. I want to write books. I want to help people live their full potential, speak, do all that. And so that was when the seed got planted. But kind of like all of us football players do, or people, their identity to what they do, when that's done, and you ask yourself, well, what am I going to do next? Who am I? And I went through a quarter life crisis when I was cut by the Jets for the fourth and final time in my NFL career. And, you know, I just got thinking, well, man, I really don't.
Technology sucks sometimes, doesn't it, guys? And we'll try to reconnect with Luke Falk again. The book, he has got, guys, his mind, and you can tell the brilliance of it. I think the number one thing I take away from him, not only in talking to him in person and being around him for a week, but covering his career and listening to Coach Leach talk about his quarterbacks, about Luke and the guys he's had in the past, is one of the things that sticks out the most about Luke Falk is he's not sensitive or beholden to what other people think about him. Early on, he was. So you can make those changes. And I think in this book, he's trying to emphasize how there's so much part of the mind game. He could have taken when Leach told him, holds the ball too long. Dude, you're sitting back there and you're milking it. And the ball's got to come out quicker. Imagine if he wouldn't have learned that lesson. He can't tell this story. He can't write a book. I mean, this is where, and I've always believed, I know in my life, getting kicked in the teeth, my growth has come from rock bottom. Or stuff that I didn't know I could handle, that eventually you do it enough, you got two choices. You can go wilt in the corner and let them keep kicking you and thinking you're bigger than the system, or that you pout about it, or you come back out and utilize that and how to shape your mind. It's easier said than done, but to be able to do it. So go ahead and finish, my man. Don't worry about the technology. I get it, brother. That's okay.
Hey, I switched over to the laptop. We'll see if the hotspot works instead of the phone. Apologies. But
that's okay, bro.
Remind me where I was at in terms.
You were just you were talking about you got cut by the Jets for the fourth time, and you like your dad had gone to Pullman. Dwayne Dyer had given you some influence.
Right. So anyway, so yeah, when I'm done playing, then I was figuring out, okay, what do I want to do? So I said, you know what, I want to really coach on mind strength. I think people really need it. There's so much chaos going on in the world right now, and anxiety levels are through the roof. What are we doing to strengthen our mind? Because if we can really master our inner world, we can handle anything in the external world. So my original thought was, well, I'm going to create a course to be an adjunct professor at Washington State, and I'll go teach this to the student athletes, because we had a one course credit program when I was an athlete there that you went through. And then, you know, that's how these modules got built. Then I started coaching on them with my private quarterback clients. And then I got into college coaching, and mind strength was a big part of what I did from a college coaching standpoint. And then I got done, I got out of that, and it was like, all right, well, it's time to put this in a book. So, you know, long-winded answer there, but really in 2020, I started to structure what the book would look like, coached on it for a number of years. And then last year I said, all right, it's time to put the rubber meets the road here with it.
When people open this book, the Mind Strength Playbook, what's the main thing you want? If you said, I got to have one thing delivered from this to anybody and everybody, what would it be?
Well, I think that you can change your belief system, and you ultimately control how you feel. You ultimately hold the cards when it comes down to, you know, what you make your life to be. No matter what the external environment does or the events that happen, you ultimately have the way and the decision to perceive an event, and then how you're going to be able to respond. And I think the great thing about this book is I'm not a guy that has $10 in my name and I'm trying to tell you how to get rich. I'm not 400 pounds and telling you how to be healthy. I've done these things. I talked about RLE. I've had the real life experience of being a kid who is extremely unconfident, who doesn't think that I can do it, that I don't think I have the talent, that I don't think I have what it takes, that I worked extremely hard, but my mind kept getting in my own way, to then being able to work with a sports psychologist, work with a mind strength coach, and train my mind as diligently as I train my body, to then be able to see, you know, the success that I was able to have. And then on the flip side, when I got to that successful point of, hey, I also have the experience of not utilizing this and then falling off the mountaintop to a certain degree, and then being able to help coach people along through it. So I think people will love it. It's very story driven. It's very entertaining. I think they'll find themselves in my story. And then the biggest thing about the book is that you can apply it. You know, just like I talked about with Coach Leach, like, knowledge isn't power. If I know the answer C on a test, yet I put B, that's not freaking powerful. You know, there's so many people that read 100 books a year, but they can't apply one of them. That does them no good. The nice thing about this book is that I will show you the black and white roadmap of how to apply what I'm talking about, so it can be powerful in your life. And I think that's what a real separator is, the real life experience piece. I'm not just talking out of the side of my mouth, or I didn't just sit in a class and say, oh, I want to go write a book on that now. No, I've done it. And then the other portion is, you know, I really pride myself on being able to put it in an applicable form. So, you know, you have the ability to make it powerful in your life. There's even a virtual locker room in there with, you know, PDF playbook, guided visualization, guided breath work, that type of stuff to really help the reader get a great experience.
Was it cathartic for you? I've talked to people, you know, people that wrote a book, because it's been on the back of my mind for years. And so I'm cathartic to the point where, even though you knew the stuff going in, seeing the success of it and just putting it down on paper and authoring a book, has it been even enhanced you more, Luke, than before you wrote the book?
I certainly think so. You know, I think writing a book, you got to go to a certain level of depth. The first draft of it, honestly, was so prescriptive. My wife and sister picked it up and they're like, no, like, this is boring. Like, you got a story to tell. So really the cathartic experience for me was just maybe opening doors that I hadn't opened up in a while, the vaults. And then it was like the floodgates opened up in terms of, you know, the good, the bad, the hard, the difficult. This isn't a shallow book. I don't go shallow. People will learn more about me. They'll probably know me personally after they read this book, because, you know, without going to that level of depth and that level of honesty, I don't think that I'd be doing the reader any justice at all, any service to them. So it definitely was cathartic. And it was funny too, to be able to use my own mind strength through the process. Writing a book is not easy. And I had the inner critic thoughts come up. You know, who am I to write a book? Well, you didn't have a long NFL career. Why would people listen to you? Well, I had to go through my same exercises as I'm working through this book, and as I'm stepping into my own new career, to be able to, you know, silence, or not even silence, because I've never been able to silence my inner critic, but disempower it, to move on from it, to choose new thoughts, to be able to, you know, raise my internal success thermostat, as I call it, to new levels and new heights, so I can achieve this new field. and feel worthy of it. Because I think so many of us just get in our own way. We might taste a little bit of success, but then we do things unconsciously or consciously to pull ourselves back down to a level that we feel comfortable with, that we feel worthy of. So I think a big part of this book is it can help you change your belief system about yourself and what you're worthy of and what's possible for you.
It's the Mind Strength Playbook. Master your mind and elevate your game. Let me end with this, Luke, and just and I'll put you on the spot here. And I know he's got a bunch of athletes in his family that have been pretty good at the position too. But this, I love what you're doing with this. If Peyton Manning called up and said, spend 5 minutes with Arch, you know, highly publicized, a guy who's probably questioned his confidence at times in the season. They've won and they've lost. Don't look like a playoff team, yet he's still a Manning. All these things that come with this, it kind of fits what you're going with the Mind Strength Playbook. What would your advice to him be, or anybody in his situation that are high profile like that, that have so many expectations?
One, I'd love to work with him. I think he'd be the perfect client. I think he'd really buy in, and I think it'd be excellent for him. So I've actually been trying to figure out and scheme plans and plots of how to get my book to UT and get him a copy. And whether I work with him or whether he just reads it, I think it'd be of great value. I think a big thing is to be able to detach your identity from what you do and what people think of you. That's a big one. I mean, I think an athlete's greatest source of interference is the need for approval. When you need somebody's approval, you give them the cards and the power to be able to dictate and determine how you feel about yourself. And I think a lot of athletes get into that realm. And why? Because you're looking for love. You're looking for maybe something that you didn't get as a kid. Maybe that's a situation, or, you know, that's what a lot of young people do. You're just immature in that regard, where you don't have a lot of perspective of what is foundational and actually, you know, sustainable. I think a lot of these kids build their house on a pillar of sand, and that wave's going to come in and crash it down. So I think the biggest thing would be able to shift his identity and help him get off the teeter-totter trap. So, you know, athletes live on the teeter-totter trap by, oh, I have a good performance. Oh, people like me. Oh, I compare myself, I'm better than somebody. And what you're doing is you're just constantly going up and down. And when you focus on things you can't control, I learned this from my sports psychologist, your anxiety goes through the roof. And if your anxiety is through the roof, what happens to your performance and the quality of your life? It's going to go down. Well, all those things on the teeter-totter trap are just that. Those are things you can't control. So anxiety levels are going to rise through the roof. So really, the Mind Strength Playbook is all about being able to put your foundation on something that's sturdy, that is unchanging, unwavering. You know, for me, that is through my spiritual relationship, through other athletes or people that I work with. It might be a mission, it might be a purpose, it might be a value, but it's not dictated on outcome or approval or the accolades or the status or that society scoreboard, as Peterson would call it. And it's a great shift. Anyways, but that's, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of all this stuff. It's like going to the gym. I don't go to the gym and do 100 crunches and go home and I'm gonna have a six pack. No, it's like you got to work at it diligently and consistently, and eventually you'll be able to be in a physical body that you want to be in. Well, you'll be able to develop the mind strength that you want if you stick with it.
Where can they get the book, aside from a lot of places? Where should they go?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the easiest place for a lot of people is Amazon or Barnes & Noble. They can also go to CoachLukeFalk.com. I got a deal up there. And, you know, for right now, I just posted this today. If you want to check it out, you want to dip your toe in before you commit, you can go download the first chapter for free. That's on my website. So just go take a look at that, or go look on my social media profiles. You should be able to get that link and go test it out.
My brother, you sound peaceful, happy, family good. You look good. And 100 crunches may not get the abs, but you're 100 closer than most people are. So keep it up, my man. I look forward to having you join us again to talk football, to talk your book. I know you're having success with it. And I'm going to remember, I put me first in line when you're Tony Robbins times two. And we got to chase you down for 100 grand a show, brother. So we appreciate you. I love you, my man. And I'm so grateful to have you on, and you're always welcome on the show. Again, the book is The Mind Strength Playbook, and I got news for you. You're going to learn at any stage of your life exactly what Luke Falk's been through, but what you can learn to help you get through the stuff as well the right way. Luke, great stuff, brother, and we appreciate you as
Dave,
always, my man.
Appreciate it. Apologies on the technical difficulties, but hopefully the message went through. So thanks for having me on.
The message was loud and clear, and we love it. Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Thanks. That's the great Luke Falk, one of my favorite dudes. And here's the Segs, come on in. The bummer part about it is then on a day-to-day basis, quarterbacks in his room don't get to be with him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that, you know, aren't around him, because guys like Luke Falk, we need, especially not only just, you know, to be able to keep the Mike Leach, the fact that the guys like him and Gardner Minshew and all the guys that were able to play and under Mike and a lot of them coaching and still playing. But the other side of it is that the bigger picture is he gets to touch not just quarterbacks at all level. He can still touch those and privately train them. And it's not just Segs. I say it on here all the time. Everybody thinks it's just dropping back and throwing a football. There's so much more that goes to playing the position. But it can also help you if you want to be a CEO. You want to be a business owner. And he hits something that I can validate. Did our a lot of times as athletes, and I know I was, and I had to get out of that myself, our identity and our self-worth is locked up into how good we can throw a ball or how many clicks we get on a TV show. And once you can get by not worrying about the validation or approval of others, it's a pretty important step. And that position is so fragile, quarterback, but it doesn't just touch quarterbacks. You get to quarterback your life. And go get that book, the Mind Strength Playbook, Luke Falk. And I love guys who lived it that were not stars. And Segs, when people have approached me about the book thing, and I haven't, you know why? I got to get through this. Is who am I to write a book? Right. Just like he said. Well, Sean, you played, you broadcast, you've been through rock bottom, but still there's this part of you that thinks, who the hell wants to read what I got to say? Well, you hope somebody does. And in this case, I want to read. Get that first chapter for free. I think you'll love it. And I love the fact that Luke's put his mind to this and making a difference in a bigger picture and a bigger platform. Good on him, and great to have him on. We'll have him on again. I was a hell of a football player, and I could have pictured him and Mike going at it, because Luke's really smart too. But it takes a special human being, and it did, to understand Mike. But Mike really is a simple guy, or was, should I say. I talk about Mike like it's the present tense, Segs, because I miss him. But his impact will be remembered far and wide, and guys like Luke Falk to extend that. But Luke's going to make an impact with this book as well. So get out there and read it, guys. The Mind let me make sure I get it right. The Mind Strength Playbook. Yep. Master your mind and elevate your game. So thanks to Luke Falk for joining us. And a few technical issues don't matter when he's making that message.
I love that, you know, and I'm sure it's like this with all his quarterbacks, a lot of his players. He had when he had the Mike Leach cadence down, just the way he talked when he came in and, you know, motherfucked him for 10 minutes that he's telling that story. The way he was saying it, you could hear the Mike Leach cadence, the way he talked in there. So, you know, that's just burned in all his players' brains, just the way he talked, the kind of slow but methodical way he talked. It was funny. And I mean, it
makes you think while he's talking too. Luke was awesome. It's great to have him on, and we'll get him on again. I'm sure it'll be, I can guarantee you this, judging this won't be his last one. He'll be building upon these to make a difference, which is good. And I'm sure corporate America is going to be grateful to have him, not just the stories, but the lessons learned. So great to have Luke on. Appreciate it.
For sure. Moving on. One thing we've talked about a lot this week is the college football coaching carousel. Well, one name we had mentioned by Desmond Howard, which we talked about, was Steve Sarkisian, and watch that Texas job. Sark was asked about it yesterday, and basically he said, people reporting or insinuating that there's a possibility I could leave the University of Texas, that's absolutely false and untrue. I'm not going anywhere. So whatever Desmond Howard heard, Sark is getting out in front of it right now and telling us that he's not going anywhere. He plans to be the head coach of the Texas Longhorns for the foreseeable future. Now, does Texas think otherwise? Maybe. But Sark himself is saying he's not going anywhere right now.
Well, the AD also there, Segs, when that had come out, he had quote tweeted the video.
Yeah, right.
From Desmond Howard. And I don't know where Desmond got it. That's okay. This isn't even really about where Desmond got his information. He put it out there, and so, of course, people are going to respond. The quote tweet, you know, when he said that he really wasn't, he goes, that was basically news to him. I'm paraphrasing, when the athletic director had addressed this. It obviously got to him, or he wouldn't have quote tweeted it, because
we lost Sean. So we're talking about technology. It's one of those days right now where things just aren't going well with technology. But yeah, it's just something when, you know, you look at it, he was saying basically news to him, the AD said that. So I don't know where things go from here with Texas. We heard Sark's name from Desmond Howard. Then we heard Lincoln Riley's name from Josh Pate. We talked about a couple weeks ago. Those are two big jobs that we thought, okay, maybe we really got to watch. Now I think both jobs seem secure and staying with the guys that are leading them currently. So it'll be something to watch as we continue to see this coaching carousel, which continues to get bigger, because we're seeing hearing names for Florida. We're hearing Kenny Dillingham for LSU. We're here, you know, we have James Franklin now at Virginia Tech. Penn State has been kind of silent when we're looking at the coaching carousel. So I don't know how this all ends up. We're Eli Drinkwitz's name has been mentioned all over the place. But I think that there's still a lot of moving parts. We're going to have other jobs open because coaches leave and go to Penn State or go to Florida or go to LSU or all these other jobs that are available. And we get Sean back in here.
Did you fall out of your show? Does that happen? Did you fall out?
No, you fell out. So as far as I know, I'm still going. Yeah.
So where did I end on mine? What were we talking about?
You were still talking. You were talking about the AD of Texas, saying that, basically saying news to me to Desmond Howard's video.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So damn, everybody, the technology all over the place. What are you getting raided by this? It comes down to this. Sark understands this world, and I don't know where Des got his information. Somebody told him, that's fine. It just comes down to, really, is Sark staying at Texas? It appears that's the case, and I don't understand why he wouldn't be. It's a down year for Texas, considering what we expected going in. But why would you leave a gig like that? I mean, if you have it, everybody pines to get a job. It's one of the five best jobs in college football. And you've got access to money in NIL, and people want to play at Texas. So I would imagine that Steve Sarkisian, you know, and as a coach, well, going back to Luke Falk, you can't let, you know, the validation or approval of others shape what you're doing. You're going to get opinion on this, or people with supposed inside information on it. But if it's news to Sark and news to the AD, well, then guess what? Steve Sarkisian will continue to be the Longhorns coach. It just won't be in a Final Four this year, because I don't think they're a playoff team, but I'm glad he addressed it.
Yeah, I mentioned when you fell out that, you know, we've heard about Texas. We heard about USC with Lincoln Riley. It feels like both those guys have come out and basically said, I'm not going anywhere. And both those schools seem secure in keeping their head coach moving forward. So, and then, you know, we're hearing a lot of names for different schools. We mentioned Kenny Dillingham the other day to LSU. We've heard Drinkwitz's name kind of mentioned with Penn State, maybe to watch at Florida. Penn State's been pretty quiet when it comes to the coaching search. So there's still a lot to happen in this whole carousel of coaching changes. And we're still going to have more openings, because someone's going to leave a school to go to Florida or LSU or, you know, all these other openings, and then we'll have more openings.
Yeah, thanks. You know what I think about? I go through like these top programs, Michigan, Ohio State. I don't think Harbaugh ever would have. I'm talking about sans they don't get fired. Yeah. I'm talking about they've got a contract. Why would Harbaugh ever leave Michigan to go somewhere else? Alma mater, that's his place. Why would Sark? I know he went to BYU, but why would you? I'm talking about to go to another college place.
Right.
Now, it used to be you'd go because money. Well, all the big program, hell, like go to the NFL money. College coaches are making more than NFL coaches are now.
Right.
They are making more. And then with the buyout and all that stuff, I mean, I don't know if security is ever a point you put with coaches, unless your name's Nick Saban or someone like that, Andy Reid. But you know, the security at a big program when you got this big $100 million contract. So I don't know why a guy, why would Lincoln Riley ever want to leave USC? As long as they're not firing you got, why would you ever want to leave that gig? The money, the recruiting grounds, all that stuff. And the same with Sark. And I know we get questions, would Sark go to the NFL? I'm sure the NFL is an option. But you're no longer leaving college football, because you're not getting a 10-year, $110 million deal from whatever some of these guys are getting to go to the NFL. You're just not. 5 years if you're lucky, 6 years if you've won a Super Bowl and they're extending you. So there's not that much more security there then you're usually getting a job on a shitty team. Mm-hmm. He's got a job. He's got a job where he's got 15, 20 guys every year that we're talking about being first round picks at some time during their 3 or 4 year career at University of Texas or at Alabama or at Southern Cal. So I don't know why he would leave. And is the NFL an option? I'm sure it is. The one thing that I would say that would drive him not to another college program, to the NFL, would be if he grows weary of NIL and pay. You heard Luke Falk right. talk about it, that is forcing coaches out. I don't think another college job. Where are you going bigger? Who's spending more money on NIL? Where are you going with a better chance? And think about how fragile the business is. You go from at the end of last year, you know, you don't get to the national, you don't get to the national title game, but you're in the Final Four, and bam, you're rolling. And he's the king, and you're getting a contract extension, all that. And then you slow start, and you're excited about Arch. And all of a sudden, people want to think, well, he can't coach. He's not any good. Stop it, folks. The instant gratification of thinking that everybody's going to be great every year is bullshit. It's not feasible. You don't do it in your own job. I'm not talking about you, Segs, any of us. Sometimes ratings on your radio show may not be a sign. Sometimes the ratings are through the roof and you didn't get a pay raise. Sometimes you're frustrated. Sometimes your sales force sold 100 million in the next year because whatever, you're down to 80 million. Does that mean you're a failure? No, it's not a life sentence. It's only a life sentence if you let it become a life sentence. So this, well, what is Texas supposed to be in the Final Four every year? It's not feasible. It's just not. Just like at A&M, they're having this success. A&M's not going to be doing the same thing for 10 straight years. At some point in time, they're going to go through some struggles. They just are. They've been through them. They're going to get the coach a new contract. They may win 9 games next year, Segs. I don't know. They may win 12. They may win 14, counting playoffs or what have you. So it's going to happen. The fact that they've had a tough year right now by their standards doesn't mean we should all say, oh, let's fire and move on. The grass is not always greener.
Right.
So slow our roll. It's the same with quarterbacks. Okay. Who knows? Arch comes back. Maybe he wins the Heisman next year. I don't know. I can just tell you this. This instant gratification that one bad year or one average year, all of a sudden, we got him going somewhere else. I get why you leave the NFL, but now with money, it's usually not money. You know what it is? It's, I don't want to deal with the bullshit of a guy leaving on me 4 times after I've trained him. And then he gets to me for the 3rd time, or meaning he transfers for a 3rd time, or he's leaving after we won because he wants more money. We're that stage. So it's crazy, Segs. Think about this. You have more control over the player now in the NFL than you do college. So why the hell? I mean, that's the only reason I get why you'd leave. Because you ain't getting a longer-term contract at the New York Jets than you are as the coach at Texas. Meaning, if you sign that big 8 to 10 year deal, right?
Right.
You saw the extension that, you know, that Cignetti signed at Indiana. And that's at Indiana. So I understand people's sources, and I don't know where Dez's source is. Maybe it's a valid one because we don't know who to trust. You know, people are always saying, no, that's not true. We'll know if it's true at some point, but I would anticipate that judging from the AD and from Sark, that he'll be your head coach next year in at the University of Texas.
Yeah. Moving on. One last story I want to get to before we get out of here today. I find it very interesting because of what happened after this interview. Michael Porter Jr. was on a podcast. I can't remember which one he was on with, but he was asked about comparing WNBA players to just men players. And he basically said, we have to stop comparing WNBA players to men. He says when he was young in 8th grade, his sisters were older, very good basketball players, played at Missouri. There he was on with the Balls, Lonzo Ball and his brother Jello. So he would go and he would play on the scout team against the University of Missouri as an 8th grader, 7th and 8th grader, and he would dominate. And he had no problem, you know, putting up monster numbers against these guys. And he just says, just use common sense. Like, that's what we have to do. And we've talked about on this show for other stuff. Just use common sense when we talk about these topics. Well, what happens right after this? The Brooklyn Nets, his team, reach out to him and basically tell him, hey, basically stay away from this topic when you do certain podcasts. You just stay away from these, you know, quote unquote woke, you know, where it's just stay away from these topics. So what are your thoughts on his thoughts saying, let's just use common sense? And then what are your thoughts on the Nets saying, hey, like, tone it down, basically, is what they're telling.
What did he say that was wrong or a lie?
But causes said, divisiveness, Sean. That's the problem.
Well, what's divisive? Women should be playing against women. Men should be playing against men. Michael Porter Jr. is a good player in the NBA, was a hell of a college player. Yep. And I'm sure in the eighth grade, he was kicking the best of the best women's ass that were 4 or 5 years older than him. That doesn't mean women aren't good. Women are really good against women, and they're a great product. Hell, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird. We can go with Lisa Leslie, Cheryl Miller. I went to school with the McGee twins and Cheryl Miller and Cynthia Cooper. They were friggin' phenomenal. But I got news for you. As good as Cheryl Miller was, the best player on the men's basketball team is going to destroy her, and she's the best women's basketball player I ever saw. So we should be comparing women to women and men to men. But here's where it's different. And I'm going to leave the name out, but she's a Hall of Famer, and she has got national championship rings, and it wasn't from USC. My respect for women's sports is through the roof. My respect for men who play with women, I got zero respect for men who are biological men playing with women in any sport. They shouldn't. I'm not even talking about, but swimming, it doesn't matter. I don't have to be tolerant of that, and I never will, period. So women should play against women, men should play against men. But even Michael Porter Jr. didn't say it. All he's saying is stop comparing the two. And I understand, listen, in certain things, if we were comparing free throw shooting, hell, I'm not so sure I wouldn't take the best woman over the best man. Ego's not the way, great technique. That's different. I'm not talking about that. And neither is Michael Porter Jr. First of all, Brooklyn, you're going to actually try to control a guy who's talking about something that's factual, that's going to bother you. It's a lightning rod. Just coach and run basketball organization and leave the shit alone. We got guys on podcasts talking about everything else, and this is what they're mad about? Oh, just stop it. That's number one. Number two is Michael Porter, I'm sure, was a beast when he was an eighth grader, Sakes.
This is him.
This is him in the eighth grade. Going to the eighth grade. You're junior high basketball game, and this dude's doing this, and you're going to tell me that somebody that plays backup point guard or point guard at USC's basketball team, women's or Tennessee's or UConn, is stopping him? It's not disrespect to women. It's more disrespectful to the guy by saying, well, who's stopping this? I'm going to tell you this. So back to I'm going to leave the name out. Hall of Famer. I told you the credentials. I asked the question. Would the best high school team or a great high school team in basketball beat your university's national champion and or five of the best women's basketball players together at the same time? Pros. The answer was this. They play above the rim. They beat us by 20 plus. I'm just going to I don't care. Bishop Gorman, Oak Hill Academy, whoever right now says, and I haven't looked at the high school basketball rankings now, somebody in, Power Memorial, Abdul Jabbar's former, I don't know who the number one high school basketball team in the country is. I can go with some of the names, DeMatha, you can go up to, in Northern California. These. Right. I can go with a lot of the schools. I know who they are. Pick one. The best high school men's basketball team or a top 10 high school men's basketball team is going to beat on a 90-foot court, 10-foot rims. This isn't disrespectful to women. Is going to beat the U.S. women's Olympic team by 20 minimum. They play above the rim. They're just a different. This isn't to diminish women. Damn, who doesn't think that Caitlin Clark's good or doesn't think that, Beckers or the group? Of course, there's some phenomenal players. We need to embrace and appreciate them against each other. Right. They play good basketball. They play good softball. I don't want to go and hit a woman's softball pitch. I ain't touching it. Neither you and I played baseball. All the respect in the world. But he's right. Why are we comparing them? Well, because society's allowing men to play with women, not on the WNBA level. I take that back. In certain cases, I may be wrong. But regardless of that, is the top eighth grade player in America is better than any WNBA woman's player, just so you understand this. The top eighth grade man. Remember now, he's just actually, think about this, Siggs. He's 4 years removed from being the number one pick in the NBA draft.
Right.
Coming right out of college. Well, I take less than that. He goes to high school for 4 years. Yeah, 4 years removed. Then plays 1 year of college. He's going to be the first pick of the draft, that kind of guy. The best eighth grade basketball player in the world is going to be. Tell me who's stopping him that's a female. And this is no disrespect to female. It's just a 6'8 guy. When Wemby was an eighth grader, you think that he's not dominating anybody he plays against that's not biological male the same grade or his size. And even if it comes down to just the height and playing above the rim, as this Hall of Famer told me, they just play, they're at a different level of rarefied air above the rim. Now, right. If you say three-point shooting contest where the ball's not moving, give me the technique. It's like in golf, Sigs. We're at the point now where women are hitting at 300 yards too. So that's a great equalizer. There's plenty of women that can beat up on men. But the length at times and in here in basketball, this isn't Michael Porter, I don't think, disrespecting women. And I think he's just trying to say, let women, let's judge them basically on how they are. And there's some good ones. For me, the best high school men's basketball team wins the gold medal in the female games at the Olympics and wins it like the dream team would playing against the team. They're going to beat them into submission. It doesn't mean somebody's not going to make shots, that you're not going to go away saying, man, that woman's really good, because they are. It's just a different game, and it's a fact. Matter of fact, why don't we put on a pay-per-view game and get the 10 best female basketball players on the planet against each other? It's a great watch. And have Oak Hill Academy or the best high school men's team in America and play. And I'll set the line at plus 25. Take the men's team.
Yes, and the reason that would never happen is because the women that would be on that team know that they don't stand a chance to
win that
game.
So right. They would never do it.
I mean, it's just like when the U.S. women's Olympic soccer team played against a 15U team and got dominated. They won like 7-1. And we're talking about an Olympic team. Serena Williams back in the day said, I cannot beat a man that's a men's tennis player because they are just so much better. And it was like the 260-something ranked player beat her really bad. And she's like, yeah, I can't play their game. I'm really good at
our
game.
She's the best specimen. She's the best specimen. Ever. Maybe the best female athlete I've ever watched play, dominant-wise. She belongs in that Mount Rushmore talk for women. But against the guys, Oak Hill Academy, whoever it is beating up on the best 10 women's players in the world. They're going to get shots off and do it, but when it all comes down to it, they're losing by 30, and that's no disrespect. That's just fact, okay?
And why is this a topic year after year? Because there's idiots out there that continue to say dumb shit that make us talk about it. I mean, Pat Beverly, who is in the news for other stuff right now, but just a couple weeks ago, he was talking about how, you know, WNBA players could beat men. And it's just when that was,
he doesn't even believe that.
This was never talked about 10 plus years ago because everybody just knew. And then the whole woke movement started. And then it just, we got to do this. We got to say this. We got to, you know, it's like
nothing controversial, Segs, or there shouldn't be, about you and me or anybody else sitting up here saying, listen, the best high school men's basketball team averaging 6'3 or 6'4 is going to beat and into submission the best women's team. Now, when you say that, does that mean that we're not going to be impressed with some of the women's play? Of course we are. And it's not to say that, like I said, women against women, that's the way it should be. Men against men, that's the way it should be. But it's not derogatory. It's not saying that they're smarter or better. It's just the genetics and the rest of it. And you're exactly right. The ones that are in the arena, do you really think Caitlin Clark thinks that the five best players in the WNBA can go on it? Give me the second best player on the top 10 teams in men's high school basketball, the second best player on each of those, and take their second best player and stick them on a team and the 10 best WNBA players and play a 220-minute halves of college basketball. Who do you think's winning?
It's the boys.
And it's not derogatory. It isn't. That's no disrespect to women. There's nothing controversial about it. Controversy is when it wouldn't be factual, Sigs. And if they played 10 times, guess who's winning all 10 games?
The boys.
That's right.
Unless for some reason they didn't show up. All right. We'll end the show today as we do every single day with our bet of the day. Thursday night football. Bills at Texans. We broke it down to start the show. Bills are a 5.5-point favorite. The over-under sits at 43.5. I'll start tonight or today, and I'm going to say I'm going to take the Bills minus the points, and then I'm going to say 43.5. I'm going to say the under. So I like 21-13 Buffalo in this game, because there will be good defense. We'll see some fun offense from Josh Allen do his thing. So I think Buffalo gets just enough and wins 21-13. So I'll take the Bills and the under.
Yep. I'm going to, obviously weather's not going to affect the Saints because they right. the building, right? So we don't have to worry about that on the over under part. I am with you on this 100%. I think this, you said it 43.5. Is that where you said it sits, the number? This to me is a 27 or 20 to 13, 23-13 type game.
Yeah.
That's where it sits for me. I would take the under, and I got the Bills as well.
Okay.
Buffalo. Now, they are a sporadic team at times, Segs. We know that. And they're coming off a huge win last week in a short week. Does it continue? Can they? And, you know, we will – and the Texans are obviously in a short week too, and they're coming off a victory. But this is different for both. Houston's defense is unlike – I mean, Buffalo's seen defenses, but this is as good as they'll face this year.
Yep.
And the Texans have not played a better player yet. They have not played a better player. May I can make the argument that Josh Allen's the best football player in the world. Now, he may not win the MVP, but it gets right down to it. When it just comes to football players, there's very few, if any, that are better than him right now.
Yeah, for sure. All right, that'll do it for today. Tomorrow, we're going to start breaking down games. We got in the NFL, we got the Bears and the Steelers, both leading their divisions at the moment. We've got the Colts and the Chiefs. Sunday Night Football, we got the Bucks and the Rams, which is going to be a really fun game. And then in college, we got Mizzou against OU, Oklahoma. Missouri goes into Norman and wins. That takes Oklahoma after their big win against Alabama and sends them out of the playoff.
They've got to control their emotion in this, Segs. They have the emotion of, you've got to get over what you did in Tuscaloosa. You just have to. Because Missouri's capable of going in there and beating them if they have a bad offensive game.
Right. And then we've got your big game of the weekend, USC at Oregon. USC needs the win to try and continue to make their way into the college football playoff discussion. They're ranked 15th right now. This win would put them squarely in the crosshairs of the committee as a team that is fighting for one of those last spots, maybe even gets them up to 10. Or, you know, maybe gets them to 10. And Oregon, then we'd have to see what happens with them with their second loss if they were to lose, and see how far they drop. So, lots to talk about tomorrow. Some big football games. And anything else you want to hit on? You want to talk about, like, I don't know, something weird you like to talk about? Every once in a while, you got something to throw in there and...
I'll give you something weird tomorrow. I don't know what it is. It's just, I opened my mouth and something weird is going to come out at some point.
Just open up Twitter and just scroll for 20 seconds and you'll see something that either pisses you off or just makes you scratch your head and be like, what the hell is going on?
Well, then I'll have to use Luke Falk's book around my ears. I just to immerse myself into it so you can deal with the stupidity. And as I tweeted out earlier today, just because somebody goes on your TV set and talks sports, you can take to this exactly what you want to take from this. Don't just assume somebody got a platform to talk sports on your TV that they know more than you do. They think they do, but they always don't. They have a bigger platform and they may spew a little more. It doesn't mean they know more, so don't ever let them tell you any different.
That's a great way to end the show. Thank you to Triple E, Laura, Bailey, as always. Thank you to Luke Falk. Again, go check out his book, The Mind Strength Playbook. You can get it on Amazon. If you go to my Twitter, I actually put a link to the Amazon page where you can buy his book at. And First Light.
This, before we go, it finally came out. My partners and I, this is going to be as dominant a rehydration drink as there is on the market. Well, Sean, now Gatorade's Gatorade. I get all that. But when you're talking about a drink that's carbonated, it tastes like a creamsicle soda, but it's got carbonation with zero carbs and zero calories in it. And it's got more electrolytes than most every drink on the market. And you get it at a less price and it fits like a beer can in your hand, but it's called First Light. And I'm telling you right now, this is the best and most efficient electrolyte drink on the market. and we're bringing it to you. I just have to throw that out there. Taste it. Who doesn't want a great taste that gives you the electrolytes that refuel your body, but it has carbonation in it, so it's not just boring and it's like, oh, great. This is one you'll want to drink, not one you have to drink. It's called First Light. So get in there and check it out.
I'll be looking for the truck that has my pallet full of First Light.
I'm telling you right now, it's one of those that you're going to want to drink even when you feel like, well, I don't need rehydration. That's how good it is. First Light, go to drinkusip.com, and check it out. You will find it's the best tasting and as efficient of electrolyte drink there is on the market. And you'll even get to burp after it, Sage. So there you go. Ooh. Recovery right here, man. Recovery even when you don't need it. First Light, drinkusip.com.
Can't wait to try it. Again, go like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, as we are every single day of the week. We will talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.